Are we exposed? Security teams ask this every day. Vulnerabilities across network, cloud, AI, and OT silos hide the truth, and attackers are watching. Tenable unifies your tools, teams, and data so you can spot and close risks fast. Tenable's AI-powered exposure management gives teams one view of risk, helping them focus, take action, and close critical exposures fast. Visit Tenable.com. Tenable. Your exposure ends here.
Thanks for joining me for another Blunt Business here on CannabisRadio.com. Appreciate all of you joining us. We're going to be talking about the Business of Cannabis event going on, coming up on November 6th in New York City, or outside of New York City, in Williamsburg at the Wythe Hotel. And it's in conjunction with the folks at Prohibition Partners that have done a lot of events, you know, across Europe. And we've heard from the folks there from a long time here on the program, especially in our Green Peak series. And today we're going to go ahead and talk about what's going on with them as their next event is approaching in the coming weeks. Actually, it'll be just before the actual event as we record this program that we will be publishing it. So my next guest lives at the intersection of technology, revenue, and leadership, spent 7 years at Salesforce before building top companies in the global cannabis industry, including Lyft & Company, Dutchy, and Kind. And currently is the principal of SKV Ventures. You'll see what the SKV stands for in a moment. He invests and advises and acts as a fractional growth slash revenue officer for market-leading cannabis companies. Also found CanAcquire, a retail acquisition platform based in Canada, and also co-founded the Cannabis Collective in New York, which is also very important because of the fact that we're going to be a little bit New York-centric with what this conference is going to be entailing coming up in several weeks' time as we're recording today. I'm here with a speaker at the Business of Cannabis New York event and the Cannabis Collective co-founder, Shabazz Karavirani. Shabazz, thanks for being on with me. Really appreciate it.
Thanks, George. Appreciate it, man. Not many people get my name right away like that. So bravo. Appreciate
it. Well, I only do it once and I just go by initials. The rest of the show, I think we're just fine. I must say a little bit of familiarity with Salesforce. I don't know if you know Todd Friesen, if you've heard of his name in the past, but
I've seen his name a lot. Yeah. I used to see his name a lot.
Because he did work at Salesforce. I think it was there and then he most recently left, but he was there for a while.
Yeah.
The original SEO Rockstars on another network that I've always produced, or, you know, 20 years ago, but that's another day of another time.
Nice.
Off the bat, $2 billion in legal sales now in New York State. But that's what I want to really talk about is when it comes to the New York market. First of all, when it comes to the Business of Cannabis New York Conference, how New York-centric is the event when it comes to the focus on the New York cannabis market itself?
Yeah, it's extremely focused on the New York market. So Business Cannabis has been running this event for the last, I think, 4 years. Mm-hmm. Last year was phenomenal. They're always plugged in into what the current needs of the industry are. And the New York market is so interesting because, you know, last year there weren't 480, 490 stores like there are today and 600 brands. There was a lot less. And then the year before that, there wasn't really a market. It was just starting out. And each year, Business of Cannabis is talking about the nuances of what's making that market tick at the timing of the market, as well as, you know, bringing in the right players to make sure the conversation is advancing. So Business of Cannabis New York is specifically focused on the New York market, but a lot of patterns and a lot of different components emerge that help really predict other markets that are opening up like Minnesota and things like that. But very, very, very focused on the New York market.
Now, one of the things that right off the bat, as this New York market is under constant scrutiny, and I'm not looking to go ahead and, you know, put too much. I'm just wanting to just make the point that what New York State and New York City are dealing with right now in the cannabis market, it wasn't only about a month ago, the New York Times putting out stories about private labs and testing their cannabis products for potency and checking for contaminants, and energy experts, I'm going to put that in quotes, saying the tests are not reliable. So that was coming in to play. And, you know, there was an analysis of testing certificates from New York and lab tests commissioned by the New York Times saying that some products sold in licensed dispensaries labeled safe could actually contain harmful levels of pesticides, among other unsafe additives, or contaminated by a toxic fungus. And I don't know if that's anything to do with the fact that some of the products out there can still be sun grown, that there's outdoor grows are being allowed as opposed to greenhouses. There's a lot of things going to be said about that. But again, New York Times putting a spotlight on that, magnifying glass on this in particular. As we're leading into the part, you know, what can you tell me about what has been talked about that will be talked about upcoming about compliance? Because the subject, it's as if the Office of Cannabis Management, they don't have the best stranglehold on this, I would say. So what can the industry do themselves that's going to be talked about at this event?
Yeah, I mean, as far as the testing goes, I mean, you look across the board in Canada, California, Michigan, testing has always been something that has been challenged quite a bit, and rightfully so. I think there could be a lot deeper of an analysis in that testing, but for the most part, I mean, that story that came out was just one specific instance, and in my opinion, got blown out of proportion. I mean, you have $2 billion in legal sales over the last couple of years in New York market. This year alone, we've already hit $1 billion, 490 stores. And, you know, a lot of individuals in New York City are getting access to legal, regulated products. And a lot of these cultivators, a lot of these processors, they really, really care. And they want to put the safest products on the market. And so New York's doing the best with what they have. I think the bigger challenge is really the proliferation of illicit stores right now. And that's where kind of this challenge comes in because, you know, in New York, we talk about compliance. There isn't a seed to sale component right now. So there's something called inversion where you have a ton of illicit or out of state product coming in and proliferating the New York market. And that's in regard to, you know, that lack of track and trace. So for a long time, New York leaders across manufacturing, cultivation, retail were all awaiting BioTrack as the primary track and trace tool. Now that's changed to Metric. Right now, I'm the vice president of growth at an organization called Blaze, which does the point of sale front of the house. We integrate with Metric, and Metric's a great company. I'm excited for them to come in. I think that the challenge has always been just this, you know, seesaw of information and different things that have happened over the course of, you know, the New York market rollout that I think operators are ill-prepared for what's to come. And it's going to require, you ask, you know, what's it going to be if the OCM isn't kind of on top of it? And I don't want to bash the OCM. They're great. They're, you know, they're trying their best.
Oh, no. And I want to make the point that, you know, as you make the point here, first of all, Blaze, very familiar with Chris Viola's. We've had him here on Blunt Business as well. And the fact is that at the Business of Cannabis show, you are going to have somebody representing the Office of Cannabis Management, El Simon Washington, that'll be speaking on navigating regulatory and policy flux, staying ahead of the rule book. So it's going to be addressed at this event. And that's extremely important that, you know, the OCM was being so forthcoming at participating at the event to give more of access there to the Office of Cannabis Management to address these issues.
Big time. And that's one of the things that Business Cannabis does really well to toot their horn is last year they had John Cagilla come in and speak. They get a lot of different constituents. And so to your initial point of, hey, what can the industry do from a compliance perspective? Industry just needs to come together and continue to come together and have these conversations because things are moving so fast. And, you know, the bigger this industry grows, the more entrants there are, the more dilution of information there is. And thus, you know, if we don't have a concentrated effort in terms of compliance, in terms of making sure that, you know, the right people understand the right things, unfortunately, the legal market will continue to lose out to the illicit market. And I think instead of the illegal market competing with one another, naturally, you're competing for this slice of the pie. The illicit market is continuing to take these consumers and, you know, they're selling, you know, legal market cannabis for half the price, right? And so when you look at from a compliance perspective, when you look at from a risk tolerance perspective, when you look at from a collaboration perspective, New York Cannabis has a long way to go. But luckily, you know, we have events like this. We had, you know, we had Hall of Flowers. We had Revelry, which did a really good job of bringing all the brands together. And, you know, we have a group like mine, Cannabis Collective, which is bringing executive leaders to dinners and to the table to actually connect and say, hey, what do we need to do to make sure this industry lasts for a long time? Because one of the challenges that we've seen is early days, you had a crackdown and enforcement on some of these illicit stores. Fantastic. There was padlocks, et cetera, et cetera. There is no padlocks. There is no, you know, none of that anymore. You got illicit stores popping up right beside legal stores. And this isn't just a downstate problem. I talk to retailers in Western, you know, New York, upstate New York. This is a problem that's everywhere. And so it decreases the value of the legal market when, you know, new entrants have to go through all these hoops. There's limited funding, so on and so forth. And then an illicit market store can just pop up kind of thing. And so hopefully that answered the question, but there's a big rabbit hole there.
Well, you know, there's a story that wasn't too long ago from Cranes talking about the constant crackdowns of illicit shops around, smoke shops still being active. And like you said, being along with other areas, you know, very close proximity to legitimate stores, such a big problem to go and deal with. And
such.
With that, also one area I want to make point of, and we'll go into commercial break, was a very interesting appointment from the Office of Cannabis Management. They now have a chief health officer. That's Dr. Jun Chen, an osteopathic physician, just back in July being posted here saying, quote, her role, she says, is to oversee health, safety, research, providing, protecting patients, and most importantly, public health. And, oh, there's a physician in this role. That must be medical cannabis. So that in place, very important. And, you know, it comes down to education. It comes down to making sure physicians are giving useful and updated information for when patients who may not be certified medical marijuana patients go into the exam room, know what cannabis products they can pick up at the adult use store that can be used for them. So great information on that. And from the collective, the cannabis collective in New York, in your perspective, I haven't known if there was a lot of these kind of appointments done in other markets, in other cannabis regulating bodies, if we've had chief medical officers in place. But tell me about what you think about this significant change.
Yeah, I think Jun Chen being appointed is a great appointment. I think, you know, she used to run a company called Leafwell, which is a great medical platform. Oftentimes when, you know, I was just in Iceland, just to go back a second, I was just in Iceland, and, you know, they're talking about medical cannabis. It was a medical cannabis and hemp summit. And sometimes I think in a recreational market, we forget about the fact that there are real patients who need real cannabis. And I think that once the market goes recreational, the medical side kind of falls off the map because you get, you know, caught by the CPG hysteria. And the fact of the matter is cannabis is a true medicine. And, you know, New York was a medical market and has been a medical market for quite some time. And I believe that this, this idea of appointing this this person, Jun Chen, who's wonderful, Dr. Jun Chen, allows us to really, you know, hopefully get on the path to delineating recreational versus medical cannabis and providing the care and patient outreach and patient needs and different components that, you know, patients need, whereas, you know, recreational cannabis might be a little bit differently. So I personally think it's a fantastic idea. I've seen it in Canada where the medical market just got forgotten about. You know, whereas doctors, nurses, pharmacists were being educated, then recreational cannabis hit the board and they stopped being educated. I believe this is a great way to continue to provide patients with the access that they need for this magical, magical plant, especially with real, you know, challenges around like cancer, glaucoma, you know, Alzheimer's, these different PTSD, these types of things. I don't think if you walk into a dispensary, my mom walks into a dispensary, you know, and she has an ailment that really needs to be taken care of. She needs someone to talk to. And that person might not be a bartender at the, you know, at the store. And that's okay, because this medicine is super advanced. Again, being in Iceland, I met this nurse from Chicago. And one of the things this nurse has been building, she's awesome, is she's building a database where it actually shows you what the side effects are if you take cannabis with other prescription medication. Most doctors don't know that, right? Like I've been in hospital rooms. I've been in different rooms before where it's like, okay, you can't take this, that, can't eat. Oh, well, I'm on CBG gummies or edibles. And they're like, all right, cool. Where it's like, no. There's some different components to this, right. And so it is a medicine through and through. And I think this appointment is awesome for the New York market. I just hope that there is continues to be delineation between medical and recreational.
Well, also, and should make a point too, that by the time the Business of Cannabis event actually happens, Governor Kathy Hochul should be passing or should be signing a bill that would modernize the medical program and allow medical cannabis patients to renew certification every 2 years instead of every year, and permit home cultivation for patients improve reciprocity, make it easier for New York patients to have their certification recognized in other states. So a lot of things that are happening, a lot of moves that are being done in New York State, which are very, it's progress. And I know that was a big change from May of last year when they were going through a review of the whole OCM, mismanagement and efficiencies, and they have made a lot of great strides towards the right direction. So, you know, when I make mention of that particular compliance session you're going to have with the OCM on staff, they're going to be joining, and I'm sure other people from the OCM will probably be at the event, that's going to be talked about, and that's a very important part. So again, on that first, that one-day event, an afternoon session on navigating regulatory and policy flux, staying ahead of the rulebook. We'll talk now after the break. We're going to talk more about other things that are going on this particular one-day event, which is, again, at the White Hotel, Williamsburg, New York, November the 6th. And if you haven't gotten a chance to go ahead and get caught up and get yourself registered, get tickets to go to the event, NewYorkCannabis.live, NewYorkCannabis.live. That's where you can go and find out more information about it. I guess number 6 is a Thursday, so make sure to mark that on your calendar. And if you are within the vicinity, or you can easily travel over there, make sure it's not too late to go and get tickets. Great. So we'll be back after a short break. I'm here with, again, one of the lead speakers in the Master Ceremonies, it looks like, at the Business of Cannabis New York, and Cannabis Collective co-founder Shabazz Kara-Virani. We'll be back with more Blunt Business after this. Welcome back. I'm here talking about Business of Cannabis with Cannabis Collective co-founder Shabazz Kara-Virani here on Blunt Business. And the other area that's always been talked about a lot when it comes to New York State and a cannabis market is social equity applicants. And one of the things that you're going to be doing as well, I want to make before we get into that part, is your participation at the Business of Cannabis. You'll be starting off things with curated networking roundtables in the terrace of the hotel there. So a lot of different topics that can be going on, and various topics that we'll be looking forward to is smartest way to future-proof your retail business, how retailers can work or not against the OCM to unlock growth, where regulators will move next, where the real money comes from New York's next retail wave, mergers and acquisitions, legacy consumers choosing a licensed dispensary over the street, incentives, loyalty models, storytelling, brand culture, so many different things that are going to be going on here. Tell me about this hodgepodge of different things that are going to be going on with these roundtables that you're going to be having. Tell me about what you have in store that you are going to be aware of doing and how this will work out.
Yeah, amazing. We have a lot in store. And this is the reason I love Prohibition Partners team, is because they put on really curated events that allow the discussion to just go outside of these events. And so the idea for the roundtables is to have different leaders from across New York cannabis who have been influential, who have been impactful, who are building and who are going into the trenches and really seeing those nuances, those trials, those tribulations, those triumphs, and lead different sessions where together information can be gathered and you can walk out of there becoming more successful. Because the hard truth about the cannabis industry is that not everyone is going to be successful. It just is game theory. It's just what the world is. You know, everyone who comes in will not be successful. However, our job, and we believe it's a responsibility, I believe it's one of my responsibilities from seeing what I've seen across the industry, is to help make sure that everyone has the right tools to at least become successful, right? And the true nature of this is, look, you have a medical market, you have an illicit market, you have a hemp market, right? You have all these different pieces. Then you have, you know, locations that aren't, you know, made the same. You have, you know, we talked about social equity where, you know, a lot of them, it's amazing that they're open, but a lot of them had some predatory, you know, loans happen to them. And, you know, they have some spaces that are massive that they have to, you know, really make sure that their revenue per square foot is really helping, you know, get to where it needs to be and optimize. And so there's all these different components. And on top of that, you have a very uneducated customer base. You still have stigma, right? But you're in the greatest city in the world, in my opinion, my humble opinion. And so there is, if you can make it here, you can truly make it anywhere. And so these roundtables are truly designed to help navigate the complexities of this industry while also creating actionable steps and, you know, instructions to say, hey, here's a few pieces that might help you, you know, better. For instance, you know, Blaze is really going to help try and focus on some of the things that we're releasing so that we can help become their AI, their profit and loss partner and become more of a partner versus a point and click solution. You know, you have amazing guys like Dave Vautrin who are going to be speaking. You know, he's kind of helped found Travel Agency and now is going on to be the CEO of Fluent. So a little bit of a different scale conversation when you look at that from one store, two stores, five stores to 40 stores across different states, right? So there's a variety of different things that are going to happen. But the idea is that many people come to conferences, they listen to panels, and then they can't even remember what they learned. Here, the idea is you walk out of there and you have three, four, five pieces of tangible information and discussion points written down where you can actually say, hey, I'm going to go apply these mechanisms to supercharge my revenue, to increase costs, increase my ability to connect with my people, things like that as we kind of go along, because we're going to be in 2026 before we know it.
You know, I got to point one thing out you just said there about travel agency, because the story, and we're going to feature them on Grassroots Marketing. It'll probably be out there for folks before this episode goes out. But the Project Pigeon, Carrier Pigeons, I love it. I don't know if you heard about this or not.
Yeah, I love that. I just commented on that post. That was great.
They have four locations in Manhattan and Brooklyn, rolling out delivery by Carrier Pigeon. That is fantastic. 20 pigeons, custom fitted mini red pack or backpacks, carrying up at least a gram of product. That is hilarious.
And so good.
I wonder how about the reliability, but it's amazing, the idea of this. This is like really cool. And yeah, who needs drones?
I love that. I don't know if it's real or not, but from a marketing stunt perspective, it's incredible. So
looking at the picture, they show the pigeons in the box. Like, it's hilarious. Like, are you kidding me? I keep asking about it. I haven't done the interview yet, but we're going to talk about that. I think it was just fascinating that you said that. And I can't go without mentioning travel agency. You mentioned travel agency without saying that too. So the other thing I got to talk about, and we've talked so extensively with different owners, licensees, dispensary owners, dispensary workers in New York State in the last 3 years in this program and on our Grassroots Marketing series about social equity. So the market has a lot of licensing bottlenecks. Well, now you said 480 dispensaries now. That's quite a bump up that those DOCM is doing their work, because the licensing is starting to move much quicker than before. That's for sure. And a lot of issues impacting social equity act. Like I said, we've talked about extending on the program where NPR put out a story about the kind of predatory loans that we put out there for social equity act against. There was like 20% interest and all from, I forget which bank it was in Chicago, I think it was. And the kind of thing where the licensing process taking up to 2 years from the initial fee of something like say $50,000, whatever it is, which is not refundable, and then having to go in and continue to put money in and make sure you stay funded long enough to get past the soft opening, to get past the inspection, and to finally get the storefront up and operating legally. It's been so much work, starting from housing works and moving forward. It's been quite a trench of that. So the current regulatory framework, I want to ask about that part, it being fundamentally designed for successful small businesses and equity. New York always wants to be equity first. Do you feel like it is, the process hasn't still gotten fixed right so that the MSOs are still getting the best advantage of it? And is there policies that need to be course corrected? And how is that going to be discussed at Business of Cannabis?
Yeah. I think, look, I think everyone, it's easy to riff on, you know, the MSOs and be like, oh, the MSOs. But, you know, maybe an unpopular opinion, but I actually think the MSOs are very important for a market like this, because they do have lobbying power. They have seen different things before, and they do have the ability to, you know, inject some capital into this market, right? The second thing is on the social equity side is, yeah, I mean, you nailed it, right? Like, you know, we had this $200 million fund with Chris Webber and, you know, all that sort of stuff, that DASNY piece. And it blew up, right? Like nothing happened to that. There was a big stop on that. And then you come to find out that, you know, Disney is giving, you know, only large spaces, and they have some predatory loans and different things. And it's, you know, it was a challenge to roll out. I think the social equity program has kind of found some stability right now, but you're always going to have a certain level of funding mechanics that are going to be challenging, especially in this industry, especially with, you know, non-traditional, or sorry, banks, you know, not looking at non-traditional regulated markets. You know, I talk to a bunch of different funding agencies all the time. Luckily, we got a few that have come into the space and are, you know, and there's also some private investors. But I do think the challenging thing for some of these investors is that, you know, if I'm putting my money in, I obviously want to see growth instantly kind of thing. And I think that the best thing an operator can do for themselves is really just like not they have to hedge themselves and make sure that, you know, they're not over promising and under delivering. And I think that's a factor of so many different things. But an operator, you got to make sure that you have the right customer base. You got to make sure that you have the right P&L fluency. You have to make sure that, you know, your labor and your overhead isn't anything crazy. You have to, you know, it starts from day one. You have to make sure that you're not buying too much technology that maybe you don't need. You have to really think about, hey, am I going to be doing delivery or not? So there's all these different micro decisions all the time. And, you know, I always tell operators, I'm like, hey, like, you don't need to be everything to everyone immediately. Just roll out, get some steady cash flow, figure out your unit economics, make sure that you can drive some loyalty. You understand your supply chain, right? You can start to work with some of the right, you know, brands and distributors, right? Get some of those guys in, make sure everything's going according to plan, make sure you have a pop-up calendar, all these different things. But, you know, temper the expectations with your investors over the next 6 to 12 months, because there's still going to be a steadying period, right? And so it's really easy to look at your competitor and say, that competitor is doing this, that competitor is doing that, but you still got to run your business, and you still have to remember that cannabis is such a vulnerable buying experience that if you can improve the rate of repetition for someone coming in, you can slowly increase their basket size. You can slowly increase the things that you're selling to them. It's not just going to happen on day one. And so I think a lot of these social equity operators face a lot of different challenges, but they're not too dissimilar to just regular operators as well.
The other areas of a few other particular sessions I want to make pointed out as well. One in particular I'm thinking about when I think about the social equity is also that you have one on the illicit market, Fab Five. Freddie's going to be speaking on that with Vladimir Batista of Happy Monkey. And I think about the fact that in this area, when I've talked about social equity, the role of legacy operators and incorporating them into the space as well, not just having those that might have, you know, the particular quota or whatever that check the boxes to be able to become social equity licensees under the card program, which has been there. But one of the other areas is that do we need to have certain people that have been under the illicit cannabis model that want to be legitimized and have a pathway to it? We know there's been programs been put into place by the OCN. There's a particular course you could take through to get to that point. But it's one of those areas where I think also very important, and this goes for every market, that illicit, you want to get rid of the illicit market, make sure the legacy operators, the ones that have properly and responsibly been, you know, serving the market before we had a medical or adult use market, give them a path to legitimacy.
100%. I actually just wrote I read a newsletter called Polaris Perspective. It's a leadership newsletter, and I just wrote about the shadow markets. And there's shadow markets in every single piece of life that we operate in, right? It doesn't matter if it's cannabis, it's money, it's, you know, TV, it's, you know, anything. And so one of the things I wrote about, and one of the things I strongly believe in, is illicit markets have already created an amazing infrastructure. Like, you look at their loyalty programs, you look at the way they move things, like, you look at the amount of cash that they have to move, right? It's like, it's not easy to move that much cash, right? And so they've already created an amazing infrastructure. They've created an amazing consumer base. They've got a lot of the different components down. And so it's a there needs to be more of an opportunity for them to move in and spread their knowledge. That's one of the things that we try and do on Coffee with the Collective, which is our podcast with Cannabis Collective. We've had a couple legacy operators on there because what they know and how they've been building their businesses for the last 10 years is so important, especially when it comes to like a consumer demographic. They know that already. And so our challenge becomes, hey, it's hard to move that consumer from that legacy market that knows their person is getting a good price into the legal market, especially if they don't have a good experience the first time, whatever. Not to say that they wouldn't. It's just, you know, once you've built trust on this side, it's like going to a new barber, right. You know, or whatever.
It's all reputation.
Exactly. It's trust. It's vulnerability. And so what I'd say is like that legacy operator has had so much sophistication before. They built this web of knowledge that it would do us well. And that's one of the reasons I really love, you know, a guy like Vlad Batista at Happy Monkey. He's doing awesome things. He's on that panel. He successfully was able to take a lot of his knowledge, transition into this market, now has, you know, two great stores and is killing it, also a Blaze customer, and also just taking as much knowledge as he can and feeding it back into the industry as a true champion of the legal industry. But he had to wait a long time for his license. He had to go through trials and tribulations. He was a face of New York cannabis, and he also, you know, had to go through some trials and tribulations. So it's not an easy market for anyone. But simultaneously, there's a market and there's 500 stores and there will be 1,000 stores at some point soon. And, you know, we're still at that kind of rising to its peak level. So it's a really good time to be in the New York market. And like we talked about, $2 billion in sales is no small feat for, you know, a market that's 2 years old.
No, not at all. We're going to come back to a commercial break. We're going to go ahead and give you one more chance to go and learn a little more about why, if you haven't done so, you should go ahead and register to go ahead and join Shabazz and the team there. At Business of Cannabis. Again, it's Thursday, November the 6th at the White Hotel, Williamsburg, New York. And website is newyorkcannabis.live, newyorkcannabis.live. And we'll have some final questions after this short break. Was there any other website besides that one that we should send people to, or is that the one website to send for the conference?
That's the one.
Okay, perfect. I just wanted to make sure it wasn't one through Prohibition Partners or not. Okay, stand by. We'll come on back. I'm back with final questions with the folks at Business of Cannabis New York and Cannabis Collective co-founder Shabazz Karavirani here on Blunt Business. So I know we glanced at it and I made mention of the roundtables that are going to be set up at the very beginning for only 2 hours, by the way, curated networking roundtables, and made a mention of that are going to be some important business executives, yourself, Amy Dennison, Cannabis Media Council, Stephen Murphy, Prohibition Partners, which I can say we've spoken with quite a few times here over on Green Peak because our host Richard Twicky over there has always been close with them. And we've always got a chance to talk about them with that project. Andrew Lewis of the Cannabis Collective as well, Nancy Einhart of the Cannabis Media Council. But it's one of those things to have what are one-on-one executive exchanges. And that's the thing where those kind of roundtables, I mean, I got to work speaker development for conferences we had before COVID. And, you know, if it was my team, I know they'd already say, oh, no, that should be behind a paywall. That should be like a, you know, pre-event workshop, and we should charge, you know, so many $1,000 for the whole day and give them like 7-8 hours to go and do whatever they want over there, you know, and provide lunch, coffee service, and all that kind of stuff. But this is actually as part of the one-day event. So that access, that possibility, and how this was not put behind like some literal paywall. Tell me about that accessibility of being able to have these executives freely opened up on these roundtables.
Yeah. Big time. There's, I mean, it's executives live in their own bubble, right? And leadership is a very lonely place, especially cannabis compounded. And so the idea that, you know, you have a community where you can come and share and learn, teach and grow and walk out there actually with things that are going to help drive your business. And that's why this is only geared towards decision makers, because the idea behind the content is take the content, go apply it immediately. Because as we all know, especially in today's day and age with AI and all this sort of stuff, speed matters. Speed matters times 10 in the New York cannabis industry. The pace of New York itself you know, if you step back, I remember when I first moved to New York, I was like, what makes a city so different? It's the pace.
So. Right. No, exactly. And so, but this is also specifically in Williamsburg, New York. So we're how far away from New York City are we talking about here? Is it about half an hour or so?
Yeah, I mean, it's just over the Williamsburg Bridge, super easy to get to. You know, you just take the L train into Bedford, you walk a couple minutes. It's super, super easy. You can city bike. You can even walk over the bridge. You can Uber. It's I'm a city biker. It might be cold, though, November 6th.
Oh, I'm sure, yeah.
But it's super, super easy. It's an extension of Manhattan, effectively, and it's where I live. So it's perfect. Come visit me as well.
There we go. The website, once again, is newyorkcannabis.live, newyorkcannabis.live. Still have time to go and register, be a part of the events. Anything else you can also tell us that we should be pointing out? Because I think we covered all that's going to be sessions. A lot when it comes to business, when it comes to supply chain, capital markets, investment. Well, listen, Mark, we're going to talk about as well, social equity.
Yeah,
getting access to the OCM officials there, also joining on site. And you guys also made mention of Dave Austin at Fluent, who's going to be a part of the session on the scaling as licensing expands and prices shift, all these different areas. So anything else we should make mention of that we haven't spoken with yet? Anything you can tell us about the keynotes that are going to be happening in the afternoon? There are two scheduled keynotes. Anything you can tell us about what's going to be scheduled for those events, those particular spots?
For sure. And I'll just say, just right before I say that is, like, you know, number one, there is an opportunity to win. And that's why we're also putting this together. As much as we're trying to learn, there's an opportunity to build real generational wealth. Like, the cannabis market isn't going anywhere. It's not going to implode. It will only continue to explode. That's number one. So there's a lot of positive sentiment around New York cannabis, $2 billion of sales. Next year, it'll be $4 billion, $5 billion, so on and so forth. In terms of just overall this event, this is content that you can't get anywhere else and won't get anywhere else. This collection of leaders is specifically designed. We're also going to be having an executive dinner that night, as well as there'll be, I'm actually throwing a paddle tournament the day before as well, for anyone who's interested in kind of coming out and playing some paddle and also networking. In terms of keynotes, I believe they're not announced yet, so I'll kind of keep I'll keep it wrapped up. But just know that the keynotes are going to be two individuals who have incredible knowledge and sway in this industry and have the ability to move mountains and help other organizations move mountains. And so it's going to be
wraps. Wow.
Under wraps. It's going to be, yeah,
you got to keynotes.
You got to come to the event for the keynote. But it's a keynote that you're not going to want to miss. And it's a big draw. They're both big draws, and they're going to be wonderful. Also, the last thing I'll say is I personally went out and checked the White Hotel because I live near it. And I've been there before, and the setup is cool. It's amazing. It's going to be a wicked day. Last year, we did this at the Academy of Medicine in Uptown Manhattan, and a little bit of a different vibe here at the White Hotel. A lot more, you know, Academy of Medicine is a great venue. It's very stoic. White Hotel is very collaborative and very, you know, you feel right at home there. And so it's going to be a great day. It's going to be wonderful. And yeah, can't wait to see all of it.
So make a trip across the East River to Williamsburg and Williamsburg, Brooklyn. Should also make a point of that. And also, I was going to say, when you talk about paddle tournament, I almost thought you were going to say pickleball, because I was thinking that's the new trendy sport today, but it'd be still too cold for that too, wouldn't it?
I mean, pickleball is great. Paddle's like almost like a little bit of the advanced version of it. It's you have, you know, it's kind of like tennis and squash put together. But pickle's awesome. Love it. But big paddle fan myself. So Paddle House Williamsburg, which is right down the street, is where we're going to have it.
Fantastic. So once more, Business of Cannabis, Thursday, November 6th, Williamsburg, Brooklyn, the White Hotel. Make sure to go ahead and get your tickets. Go ahead and register. You want to sponsor with them? You want to get any last-minute chance to go and join them? You have it with a couple weeks to go. NewYorkCannabis.live, NewYorkCannabis.live. And once again, I've been joined here by one of the speakers, lead speakers at the New York Business of Cannabis New York and Cannabis Collective co-founder, Shabazz Karavarani, or SKV. Hey, I'm sure everybody can call you SKV for short, because
that's what everyone calls you, yeah.
Slowly just get through in pronunciation. So thank you again for joining me here, Shabazz. And thank you, listeners, for listening in. We'll talk to you next time.
Thanks.